UK Wine Show, show number 62, matching spicy food to wine with Warren Edwards from Wines for Spice. G'day. Welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 62 for the 3rd of August, 2007. My name is Chris Scott, and this week we're talking with Warren Edwards from Wines for Spice. We're going to be talking to him about how to match wines to hot, spicy food, particularly Indian foods. Not the easiest of matches, but it can be done. Although, if you're having a vindaloo, I still think that a gallon of Cobra beer is what's required. Or, perhaps I should say blonde beer. More on that later. But before we get into that, let's have the news with our own Miss Spicy, Jane Scott.
Thanks, Chris. In the news this week, Selfridges breaks the law with its wine jukebox, and a British winery produces international wines. But first, Sainsbury's is about to trial two own-label wines in PET bottles. The New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc and Australian Rosé will also be bottled in the UK rather than at source. The PET bottle is a traditional wine shape and recyclable, and weighs just 54 grams compared to 500 grams for the average glass bottle. Meanwhile, the industry is working on making glass bottles lighter to save on material costs and energy, with the lightest bottle yet weighing in at 360 grams. Another issue is the colour of the bottles. Green bottles are greener because 100% of green glass can be recycled compared to only 50% of clear glass. Importing wine in bulk and bottling in the UK can also help reduce the carbon footprint of wine. Putting all these strategies together could result in 375 grams of CO2 savings for every bottle of wine. Next up, Selfridges has broken the law by allowing customers to drink wine in measures that are too small. When the Wonder Bar opened earlier this year, it installed a wine jukebox that dispensed some of the world's finest wines in 25, 75 and 125ml measures. This meant that shoppers could taste wines such as a Petrus 1996 by spending £32 for a 25ml sip. A bottle of this would set you back nearly £1,000. Trading standards officers said Selfridges was breaking the law because licensed premises can only sell wine in 125ml or 175ml measures. Selfridges will be lobbying the government minister in charge of weights and measures legislation to allow tasting size samples to be sold. It does seem crazy when the government is busy promoting responsible drinking. And finally, a winery in the Midlands is making British wine from grape juice and concentrated imported from around the world. The range includes a Chilean Cabernet Sauvignon and a Californian Zinfandel and is made by Beacon Valley Winery in Great Bar. They ferment the juice and blend it to produce around 1,500 bottles a month. But the range has to be classified as British wine rather than English wine, which is a term reserved for wines from grapes grown from England. It may confuse consumers to see Chilean and Californian wine that's labelled as British. That's all for this week, but 10 years ago, the Grand Marc Club of Champagne Producers disbanded. There had been disquiet among the champagne trade because quality was slipping among some members and no one could agree the minimum quality standards. Don't forget you can get more detail on these news stories on our news homepage at 3050.co.uk. That's it from me. Back over to you, Chris.
Thanks for that, Jane. Bit disappointed about the Wonder Bar being banned, but I can see where the government's coming from. A standard measure is a means of ensuring that the consumer is not shortchanged. How would you feel if you ordered a large glass of wine and instead of getting a 250ml glass, you land up with a 220ml wine? Would you notice it? I doubt it. The rules are there to protect us from dodgy geezers and Arthur Dailies of the world. It's a real shame. I was planning on going down there and trying some of the insanely priced wines that are hard to get hold of, just to see if they're as good as they claim. Where else can you afford to try a glass of Petrus? The story on glass recycling I thought was also interesting. I'd not really realised that all green and blue glass can be recycled, but not enough of it's used in the UK, so it doesn't get used. Also, I don't really understand why only 50% of clear glass can be recycled. I may end up trying to interview Andy Dore later on this year. What was really surprising was that heavy glass is bad for the environment. It makes sense. I just never thought about it. A heavy bottle to me is a sign of quality. After all, using the numbers in the article, the difference in cost between a 354-gram glass compared to a 545-gram glass is 6 pence. So cheaper wines are always looking to save money and will use that lighter bottle, while a premium wine, say 7-plus pounds, can afford to spend that extra 6p on the packaging. I never thought about the environmental cost of glass. The only thing I'd like to know is whether a lighter glass is more likely to break. After all, if you break a 3 quid bottle of wine, you're not too worried, whereas if you smash a 20-pound bottle of wine, it's a different ballgame. That said, last night I broke a 25-pound bottle of champagne, and they have the heaviest glass around. Next up is the interview with Warren Edwards from Wines for Spice. Hi, I'm here with Warren Edwards from Wine for Spice. You guys make wine for consumption with chilies and...
Yes, it's wine to drink with spicy food generally. It's Indian, Thai, Malaysian. As you say, it's wine to drink with chilies.
A wee bit different for you guys though. Most people talk about things like Gewürz, Traminers and Rieslings to go with spicy food. But the sort of wines you're doing are sparkling. Do you want to give us an idea of why you think that goes quite well with foods?
Well, we're actually coming from that classic Gewürz, Traminer, Riesling concept. And we're also coming from that equally classic lager and a curry Friday night concept. And we're putting the two together. So all our wines are lager cold and they're sparkling. But unlike a lager which is gas injected, all our wines are through natural second fermentation. Yeah. And one of our wines is actually 50% Muscat, which is a very close relative of the Riesling Gewürztraminer concept.
It's quite spicy in its own right. Why did you go for a sparkling wine for Indian as opposed to maybe the more standard still Gewürz or Rieslings?
Yeah. Well, I used to drink, my favorite wine to drink with a curry was Torres's Viña Esmeralda, which is a lovely wine. And that's, 75 or 85% Muscat and 15% Gewürztraminer made in Penedès by Torres. And that was my home wine for curries. But I found it a bit too floral after the first glass and a quarter. So I wanted to cut that with something nice and acidic. So I experimented with, mixing a 50-50 Gewürztraminer and Muscadet. And that was an improvement. And then I mixed it with... mixed a Gewürztraminer or mixed Viña Esmeralda with cava out of the fridge. And I found that semi-sparkle, the average being semi-sparkle, just about right, because it cuts that floral Gewürztraminer, floral Muscat, with something nice and acidic. And that was my first wine, Rani Gold, which is 50% Muscat, 50% cava blend, which is Macabeo, Parellada and Charolais, and then naturally second fermented.
You've got three wines. They're all sparkling. How does the sparkling work with the heat from the curries? What's going on there in the mouth?
Well, sparkling, well, first thing, it enhances flavor because the bubbles being natural bubbles through second fermentation, it increases the surface area. So there's more taste going on. And just think of a sparkling Coke and a still Coke. A sparkling Coca-Cola is just much more refreshing than a still Coke. And again, they're all cold, so we've got no room temperature reds because a cold sparkling drink of any kind, be it water, Coca-Cola, or lemonade, is just much more fresh, refreshing than a still warm temperature drink.
I tried some of your wines earlier, and you gave me some peas that were quite hot, and they sort of snuck up on me. And I found the wines did actually take a lot of the heat out of the food. Is that what you're trying to do with your wines, just tone down the heat from the food?
Yep, that's the unique area aspect of the wines, because they were designed to be refreshing. And in terms of refreshing, well, we've talked about them being cold and semi-sparkling. But in terms of the fruitiness... we've got three levels of residual sugar. We've got a very dry and a quite dry and an off dry, and particularly the off dry, the Muscat blend, has got a good amount of residual sugar. It's about 22 grams per liter residual sugar. Now, if you're ever cooking something that comes out just too hot, just add some sugar or add some fruit, and the sweetness knocks the chili level. And that was my old grandmother's trick. You just add some sweetness, and it neutralizes the chili. And that's basic principle. So the sweetness and the residual sugar rises in across the range. So it rises in relation to the spiciness of the dish.
Okay, so if you've got a really hot, spicy dish, you want an off-dry, maybe medium-sweet sort of wine. Is that what you're saying?
Well, not medium, sweet, off-dries, I would describe that. So up to about 20 grams per litre, but not much more, because then the sweetness starts dominating. And you really can see the difference before and after. So I always give people a taste of thing, it's a bit sweet. And then try the hot spices, and the reaction is quite telling before and after. So the sweetness locks into the chili into the sweetness. So in terms of football parlance, you've got your man-to-man marking. The sweetness takes out the chili, and the chili takes out the sweetness, and it calms the palate. And then you're ready for the next mouthful, be it a red Thai curry or a vindaloo or something Mexican.
See, I've always recommended to people, if you're eating vindaloos, to drink Cobra beer, but Cobra's not exactly sweet, is it? And your wines did really take a lot of the heat out of that particularly hot stuff you were sampling.
Yep. Well, Cobra beer is an excellent lager, as is Kingfisher and Carlsberg and the whole range. But for me, I'm not very keen on lagers with a curry. And there are two or three reasons there. They're nice and cold, and they're nice and refreshing, and they've got bubbles. But beer lager of all sorts has got gas injected. So if it's through natural fermentation, be it champagne, which is lovely. Champagne's lovely with the curry, but it's a bit extravagant. Mm. So we're talking about a different price level. My wines are just good lagers. In terms of lager as well, lager's got a lot of hops. So hops are bitter. And you get a lot more hops, obviously, in an English bitter. But lager's got hops, and hops are bitter. So I really don't understand and don't see why people drink lager with a curry. For me, if I was to drink, I sometimes do drink a beer with curry, but the beer I go for is a Bavarian or a Belgian or a Dutch wheat beer. And a wheat beer doesn't have the hops, doesn't have the bitter hops. So I find it much, and it's got this touch of sweetness we're talking about in terms of the wines I've produced. And so there I find a white beer, is much more refreshing than a lager, a pilsner.
The bitterness, which is, in wine's case, tannins, you wouldn't recommend a tannic wine to go with curries at all. Is it because the tannins enhance the heat? Is that what's going on?
Yep. Well, there are two aspects. There's bitterness, which are perhaps unpleasant with something when you want something refreshing. But more than that, the tannins, tannin is mouth drying. So just think of stale tea or a really really heavy Shiraz or heavy Cabernet Sauvignon. The tannins dry them out. And that's just lovely with a good steak or a wild boar or whatever. But a tannin, in terms of wine, it's just not refreshing. So I don't want, we don't have any wines with tannin. We have a rosé, which is obviously 100% red grapes, and it's a Tempranillo and Grenache, but leave it on the skins for 18 hours, and so there are no tannins, because tannins are mouth-drying. So everything in the range is mouth-watering. So we've got mouth-watering, good level of acidity, no oak, because oak actually clashes with cumin and coriander and ginger.
So how do you source your wines, and how do you distribute your wines? Obviously, you're targeting maybe some of the Indian curry houses, that sort of thing. Is that your target audience?
Yep. Well, the target audience is the Indian restaurants, but not yet. So the battle plan is to talk directly to the end consumer. And we do a lot of shows. We do the BBC Good Food show in summer and winter. And we do a lot of country shows around the country. So getting people to taste it and drink it and tell their friends. So we do most of our business through shows and internet. And we're now selling through Waitrose in London and Cambridge and also Ocado. And eventually through Indian restaurants. But we don't want it to be in an Indian restaurant and then have to train the waiters to sell the wine, because we're actually training the customers, and we're talking to customers directly and get customers to pull the wine through the Indian restaurants.
Is it a bit like how Cobra beer rolled out? Cobra beer is like an English beer, isn't it? It's it was originally designed though for the Indian restaurants. Did they go through? They went through the restaurants first and then into the supermarkets. You're almost doing it in reverse.
Exactly. So directly opposite to what Cobra are doing. Cobra went from restaurant to restaurant and built up. They've got a wonderful following, wonderful brand, and Karen Billimore is now a peer of the realm. He's Lord Billimore, so he's done a wonderful job. But he and they went through restaurants first, and I sell through a few restaurants, but it's only on demand. I'm really working on building the brand through direct customer contact.
I must admit, the local curry restaurants around where we live, the wine list isn't spectacular, but the pricing is actually quite good. It's not one of the most reasonable pricings for restaurants in our area. So I always actually drink quite a bit of wine at the restaurants because you can get some really good wines at a reasonable price compared to some more high-end restaurants. You land up paying a lot of money for the same wine. So maybe people should be looking at maybe more wines when they're having their meals out at Indians.
Yep, yeah, certainly. Because also my wines being semi-sparkling, they've got less gas, and also because they're naturally semi-sparkling, the gas bubbles are tiny compared with gas-injected lager. So just much easier on the body, and therefore there's more room for the Indian restaurant's food.
Hadn't thought about that. You talked about your wines. It sounded like a lot of them are being sourced from Spain. Is that where all your wines come from? And how do you run that end of the business?
Okay, yeah, they're all sourced from Spain. They're made from Spain. Now, they're 5,000-litre tanks for each wine, for a first blend, and then they're second fermented in sealed stainless steel tanks to give a very clean, fresh taste. We filter out the yeast. So these are our wines produced to our recipe. In terms of the wine blend, which changes from year to year depending on the season, really, on the heat, and also in terms of yeast. So we produce them. So and these first three wines are all from Spain. Now we're looking at a red semi sparkling from Italy, but that's much more difficult because I personally like a good red sparkling Shiraz with a hot curry. And there's some excellent wines. Bandrock Station is one of the cheaper ones. That I find excellent. But funny, I know Australians drink red sparkling Shiraz Christmas lunch with a barbie. But I actually can't stand red sparkling Shiraz with anything but a hot vindaloo, a hot meaty vindaloo. And I find it just too dominant with something bland. But with a meaty, spicy dish, because red sparkling Shiraz has got quite a bit of residual sugar, I really think it's excellent with a hot curry. Bit more of a problem because the market still isn't ready in the UK for red sparkling or red semi-sparkling.
We get a lot of people talk about that with me when I'm doing wine tasting. They often ask me my opinion on red sparkling wines. And I always think this must be quite hard because one of the reasons, for example, in Champagne, they add red wine to white wine to make the rosé is because of tannins. You know, if you leave the skin in contact, you're going to get the colour, but you're also going to get the tannins. And we've been talking about how tannins and the heat come through. So do you have to fine out the tannins, like add things to collect the tannins so the wine has hardly any tannins? Is that the sort of process that you're looking to do for a red sparkling wine for a curry?
Well, there are a couple of things that do seem to, and I'm not a scientist, but and I've picked this up along the way, a couple of things that do seem to remove tannins. And one is residual sugar. So extra sweetness or dosage, you have in sparkling wines, the extra dosage tends to counteract tannins. So that's why if you look at all the red sparkling Shirazes, they've all got quite a bit of sweetness, 20-25 grams per liter, perhaps more, and that counteracts tannin. And the other thing that seems to counteract tannin is malolactic fermentation. And just try it in a glass. If you've got some still wine, really tannic wines, be it Shiraz or Cabernet Sauvignon or whatever, just add some really milky, semi-milky Chardonnay. And just as you find in tea, you add milk and sugar to tea and it removes the tannin. It reduces the tannin, removes the tannin when you add milk and sugar to a tea. In the same way, it seems to be. I haven't tested it scientifically, but if you've got a tannic red wine, and you add the Venus equivalent of milk and sugar. So in terms of milk, you add something, a milky Chardonnay, milky Semillon.
That's a wine that's had malolactic fermentation. So the real sharp malic acid has been converted to a lactic, milky-style acid, which is a lot softer and creamier.
Right, yep. The malic acid being basically apple acid, green apple acid, is through malolactic fermentation, MLF, as some people call it, is converted to lactic, which is basically milky acid. And so whenever wine... most red wines actually undergo malolactic fermentation to some extent or the other. So the sharp green apple acid is converted to soft lactic, softer milky acid, and that smooths it out. So, but if you want to take that process even further, just get something, get a buttery Chardonnay and or buttery Semillon, and that add a dollop, 20%, half, 50-50, to it's sacrilege doing it in the glass, and people, you've paid a lot of money, but just have a go.
Okay.
I think we'll wrap it up there, Warren. Thank you very much for your time. That's been fantastic.
Good, that's good. Yes, thanks very much.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Warren. The key thing you can take away, I think, is to treat heat as an element that you need to manage. And it appears that acidity gives you the freshness, and sugar can hide the heat. Tannins, according to Warren, exaggerate the heat. And although Warren didn't say this, I think that if you drink wines with bubbles, they seem to be more acidic. This could be true because carbon dissolved creates carbonic acid, or it could just be that the bubbles give the illusion of freshness and acidity. I'm not sure which is right. Either way, bubbles do seem to enhance acidity. I think next time I pop down to my local curry house, I'll try a bottle of sparkling wine with the meal and see how that goes. Next week, we're going to be talking with Michael Cox. We spoke to him a wee while ago about wines for chili, but Michael has been in the wine industry for a long time, and he introduced Oxford Landing to the UK. Oxford Landing was one of the vanguards of the Aussie onslaught into the UK market in the 1980s. So we talked to Michael about marketing of wine in the UK and get his point of view. So until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Jane Scott, recorded and edited by Chris Scott, and the news is researched by Sandra Clement. To listen to other shows, visit www.ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.